This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. There will be a new representative in Michigan's 60th State House District next year. Current Representative Sean McCann is running for State Senate, and three Democrats are running for the open seat, including John Hoadley. He led the campaign to keep a non-discrimination ordinance on the books in Kalamazoo in 2009 that included protections for sexual orientation. Hoadley is making his first run for public office. Thank you for being here.
Gordon, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined by Kalamazoo Gazette reporter Alex Mitchell.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
John Hoadley, why don't you begin with a little background about yourself and perhaps briefly tell us why you're running for State House.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here. You know, I'm running because I believe in a Michigan that invests in people. And for me, that means doing more to make sure that education works for everybody, that we have an economy that's going to help us all succeed, and you know that we're having a Michigan that is open to all and protects our environment. So I come from a family of teachers, and so for me, education is a top priority. And we're in the city of the promise, and so we really have to be doing everything we can to attract and retain the best teachers. You know, additionally, as a small business owner, I've seen what's been working, what's not been working in the economy. This idea that we're going to continue to do tax breaks for big corporations with the promise of jobs just hasn't been working out well for us. So we need to make sure that we're changing that conversation and putting more money back in working people's pockets. Last but not least, you know, I was talking a little bit about this idea of a Michigan that's open to everybody and protects our environment. I've been an advocate for social justice and the environment my whole life. And really, Kalamazoo can have a leading voice in that conversation across the state and in the state legislature. So, you know, these are some of the things that really have given me the encouragement, the excitement to run for office. And then, you know, really talking to folks in the community who asked me to run provided the impetus for me to get my feet wet and, you know, give this a shot.
Alex, first question for John Hoadley.
John, despite this being your first run for public office, as Gordon mentioned, you've helped manage several campaigns in the past. Can you speak to how that experience has helped you prepare for your own campaign?
You know, like you said, this is my first time with my name on the ballot, but I've helped a number of campaigns run either as ballot measures for local government here in the city commission or state representatives here in Michigan, and even statewide offices like Bridget Mary McCormick when she ran for the Michigan Supreme Court and won. You know, I think that understanding how good public policy is made, you know, the idea that we need a lot of different voices involved in the campaign process, but also then figure out who the other stakeholders are and how we work together to tackle some of these big challenges. You know, that's really informed how I run campaigns. It's informed my background. And these are the type of things that I'd be able to bring to the office.
Well, let's talk about making some good public policy, fixing the state's roads. This is issue number one, according to many voters. What would be your plan for addressing Michigan's infrastructure needs, and how do you pay for it?
Roads, bridges, infrastructure, this is the conversation people are having. And it's not just because we had a terrible winter with a lot of potholes at the end of it. It's because it's about a larger conversation. And are we going to take care of the gift that our parents and the generations before gave us with our highway systems and our bridges and maintain that for the 21st century? Back in February, we launched a website called fixmypotholes.com, and it was an effort to raise awareness about the fact that we have been seriously underfunding our infrastructure needs in Michigan. And I was shocked at the response. You know, not only were we able to showcase local stories like Wendy Medrano, who, you know, literally driving down the road, hits a pothole, you know, gets a flat tire and is out $150. But it really showcased the safety issues related to the topic and how this is hurting our economic development. When we're thinking about how we're going to solve this and how we're going to pay for it, we need an all of the above approach. So for us, that means, you know, taking a look at this wholesale tax as one opportunity to look at the funding gaps, you know, thinking about let's expand the gas tax so everyone is paying their fair share. You know, let's take a look at some equitable solutions so folks that are driving more environmentally friendly cars are also paying their fair share without punishing them for having an environmentally friendly choice, to, you know, finding ways that we're going to support the work with the general fund. At the end of the day, this is really about a larger conversation and how we find revenue in the state and how we're going to make sure that we have a priority-based budget so we can adequately fund all the needs in our state, whether they be infrastructure, education, health and human services, and the like.
There have been a couple candidates here, and actually from both political parties, Republicans and Democrats, who've said they're open to toll roads. How about you?
I'm less excited about a toll roads opportunity here. I think that we need to have appropriate user fees. We need to have appropriate registration fees. But the semi-privatization of our roads, I am less excited about. I think, you know, there's environmental impacts to doing that. And, you know, ultimately, it's placing a burden on a lot of working families and not necessarily in an equitable way that would, you know, take into account that some of the folks that make the most money off these roads aren't paying their fair share of the upkeep of those roads.
What about heavy trucks? Detroit Free Press has an article today, I should note we're recording on June 9th, Monday, about the disparity there in heavy trucks, about you know the weight they bring to the roads. There is a provision in the House bill calling for greater fees for the trucks which are heavier and also larger fines for those who go without the permits. Is that something you would support?
I'm supportive of that concept. I need to make sure that we look at the final language that's being proposed. But ultimately, it's about the concept that folks should pay their fair share. And that should apply whether we're talking about weights on trucks to usage and, you know, corporations and tax burdens. At the end of the day, Michigan works better when everybody is doing what they can to invest in our community and everybody's shouldering an appropriate amount of that responsibility and burden.
Alex?
John, the cleanup of the Allied paper site's a huge issue for the communities or for the city of Kalamazoo. It has been a long time. I've seen you in attendance at community meetings held by the EPA to discuss cleanup options. What's been your takeaway from these meetings, and ultimately, what would you support as a means to cleaning up the Allied paper site?
Cleaning up the Allied site and other Superfund sites like it needs to be a top priority for Michigan because our natural resources, our environment, are some of the best assets that we have in our state. When we look at something like the Allied site, though, I think it's really an instructive process on effective advocacy. So we are in agreement. The city commission, the county commission, the community is unanimous. We want the PCBs removed. And so we want to accept a process that is going to be about full removal. The question, though, is, are we making sure that our voices and our stories are being heard by the right decision makers? And so it is one thing for us to have a community meeting when the EPA comes to visit us, but what can we do to continue to bring the advocacy to the EPA? Are we showing every potential solution that's going to have for cleanup in ways that we can help be a good partner in the EPA in that process? You know, I've been thrilled when I see folks like Mayor Hopewell take a trip to DC and really advocate for new technology innovations or comprehensive solutions. And, you know, not just saying, here's what we want, but here's how we can help get it done. And taking that level of advocacy to solutions like the Allied paper site, let alone a host of other issues that we're facing on the environmental front, is the type of advocacy that's going to make us effective in Lansing and in DC.
You say that the city, the county, our local lawmakers, everyone's united in the total cleanup option. Do you think the EPA has heard that message?
I'm concerned that they haven't yet, because when we see the solutions that have been proposed by the EPA, they're mostly favoring some sort of cap and bury solution. And it's what they've done in other communities across the state. You know, there's a resource problem, there is a vision problem, and I think we're doing some of the things right, you know, saying here's ways that we can put the land back to use, we can make a huge impact. But we need to be taking it to the next level, going deeper in the budget, finding ways to pay for it. And I love some of the conversations about ways to innovate with technology to then reduce the cost of that full cleanup and removal. And we should continue exploring those. So we're not only coming with demands, but with solutions.
One of the other Democrats running for the same seat you are, Dave Buskirk, not so long ago sitting in the very chair you're in, said that one of the things that the community should be doing is developing a plan for if this site is cleaned up, what we could do with it, that it would go back on the tax rolls, and therefore showing the EPA there is a long-term vision here, not just getting it cleaned up. Is that an area where you would agree?
It's an area where I would agree, and it's an area that we can't rest our laurels on, because the EPA's cleanup criteria does not take into account future economic use. So it's one of those pieces that we have to have to present a comprehensive solution, but we need to take it even a step further and look into the budget of the EPA, the cleanup funds, to figure out how are we going to pay for this? How do we reduce costs? And how do we actually, you know, provide the solution to get the dirt, the PCBs, out of our community?
Let me ask you about another environmental issue, hydraulic fracturing or fracking. The state has some new regulations on that practice. Are you supportive of allowing some degree of fracking if there is proper oversight and regulation? And are you open to it, or do you think that the practice just shouldn't happen at all?
I'm really concerned about hydraulic fracking. You know, when we're talking about that issue, we're talking about potentially permanent damage to our groundwater systems. And, you know, when you're talking about the regulations you're discussing, and one of the things that's also particularly troublesome is that those regulations allow prospectors to go on your land and trespass in a way that we haven't done in the past. So there's some additional concerns just related with those. But to the core element that I'm most concerned about is, what is the long-term impact on this type of drilling in a way that we've never seen in our groundwaters in the past? And so I think when we're talking about something that has the prospect of permanently damaging our groundwater, our Great Lakes, that we need to proceed with extreme caution.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with John Hoadley. He is one of the Democrats running for State House in Michigan's 60th District, which includes the city of Kalamazoo. Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette is here as well. Alex.
John, I want to ask for your stance on the recent minimum wage bill signed into law by Governor Snyder. Would you have supported that bill, or would you have preferred to have seen the issue go to the ballot this fall?
So I think that's not an either-or question. In this case, I would have supported the bill in front of us because we knew that something was going to move through the legislature. There was politics, not just good public policy, involved in this one. And so I was happy that the final amount was, you know, $9.25. You know, it was higher than what some of the initial amounts proposed were. I was glad to see it tied to rates of inflation so we can make sure that it's keeping up with the real cost of living on a yearly basis. Now, that said, I would have supported the 10-10 proposal because I think ultimately the more money we can put back in working people's pockets, the better. I think it also had, at the end of the day, a more effective solution for tipped workers that was in accounting for the real costs of doing that labor. So, you know, if given a perfect world, I would have loved to see the ballot measure pass. Given the political reality of what was happening, I'm glad that we got as much done in that process as we could.
Now, you say it's not either or, but a lot of lawmakers cast their vote for that minimum wage increase, even though it may very well mean that that ballot proposal cannot go forward because it basically, that ballot proposal wants to amend a law which now no longer exists. I mean, given that political reality, do you say 925 is not what I wanted, but it beats no increase at all?
I mean, 925 is not what I wanted, and it beats no increase at all. But the argument there is folks were really worried about the political reality of having a bill that said, we want to give Michigan a raise on the ballot at the same time as a host of other state legislative and statewide elections in November. And so my gut is telling me, and based on the conversations that I've had with folks who are already in Lansing, that that was going to pass. And the question was going to be, was it the 925 package or the lower, you know, 840, 830 package? And so I was glad that we got the higher of the two.
You mentioned that you thought that the ballot proposal was better for tipped workers. That's a concern for, you know, restaurant owners and those sort. You know, do they have a legitimate concern that if you brought tipped workers up too high, it would squeeze their bottom line a little too hard?
I'm a small business owner myself. So, you know, keeping the concern of small business owners and restaurant owners in mind is something that I take very personally. I also know that we've seen a lot of restaurants, and, you know, really able to address this issue. You know, things like when places like Rustica in town are already saying that they'll raise their minimum wage to $10.10 an hour for their, you know, for their workers, their tip workers. I think that is setting the example that it is possible. And, you know, I think that there were some safeguards built into the measure. It didn't raise them at the same rate as we would have raised the rest of the minimum wage. So it had time to build up to meet the tipped worker minimum wage longer than the rest of the package. I mean, there's a lot of pieces built in here that I think were addressing those concerns. But at the end of the day, if you're working a minimum wage job and you are working hard and playing by the rules, you should not at the end of the year end up in poverty. And this, whether you're a tipped worker or not, this was addressing those concerns and making sure that we lived up to those values.
Center for Michigan did a survey of citizens, and they found more or less a desire for the status quo on taxes. There is really no mandate to cut them, but there's also really no interest in increasing them, with the possible exception of some dedicated money for roads, which people do want addressed. Can you live within that framework of the current tax system that the state of Michigan has, or at least the amount of revenue which comes in from what we currently tax people and businesses?
I think our experiment in economic development, where we make giant tax cuts for corporations with the hope that they'll make jobs has not been working out well for Michigan. You know, we have seen in the last few years one of the largest tax shifts in Michigan's history, where it moved from corporations to seniors and working families. And I think that put us in the wrong direction. I think that folks are going to start seeing the long-term impact of this shift when, you know, it's on users and working families, our parents and our grandparents, to be paying more and more while corporations are paying less. And then, and as a result, they're also providing fewer benefits, slower job growth. This isn't healthy for Michigan's long-term bottom line. You know, I do think that we, as elected leaders and state representatives or legislators, we have an obligation not just to look at what's popular, but to really see what's going to be best public policy. You know, I said at the start of this, I believe in a Michigan that invests in people. And the current framework, the current pie, doesn't give us enough to make sure that we are adequately cutting slices to tackle things like a world-class education, the health and human services that we need, protecting our environment in a meaningful way. And so I'm in favor of saying everybody should pay their fair share, and we should go back to the to a budget that's based on our priorities, not frameworks that aren't letting us live up to our values and our potential as a state.
Alex?
Well, let's talk about marijuana for a minute. Would the statewide decriminalization be something that you'd support? And if so, would you possibly see statewide legalization being something that you'd be in support of?
I think I always go back to my first principles, you know, when we're thinking about public policy. Let's look at the facts. Let's keep our community safe and strong. And then let's make sure that we are promoting as much liberty, freedom, and opportunity for people as possible. So things like criminalization, there's an interesting experiment that's going on across the country. When we see places like Colorado or Washington, you know, do full legalization, we've seen places, a number of states tackle decriminalization, and, you know, places like Michigan with our medical marijuana, although Bill Schuette has been really throwing some wrenches in that process that folks wanted to support. At the end of the day, you know, if there is a system that is well regulated, that has appropriate standards, much like we see with the sale of alcohol, you know, and it keeps our community safe, I would be in favor of decriminalization and legalization based on what we're seeing occur across the state and across the country.
What are the steps to getting to that system then, where you'd be in favor of it? Is more research need to be done then?
Well, I think that we're seeing some research happen out in real life right now. So let's make sure that we're studying the lessons learned from Washington, Colorado, and a number of other states. And then let's use those facts to inform our public policy in Michigan. And at the same time, let's make sure that we're hearing from stakeholders here in Michigan. Let's talk to our police, our sheriffs, folks that have been charged to keep us safe. You know, let's ask prosecutors what tools that they need to make sure that they can adequately address the needs of the community. And let's also make sure we're hearing the story of folks who've been negatively, maybe disproportionately impacted by criminalization statutes, and then see what's the appropriate solution.
Here in Kalamazoo, there's been a couple changes in marijuana policy. One is, of course, a voter-approved initiative, which makes it the lowest priority of law enforcement. There's also been a change to make it a civil infraction. State House Speaker Jace Bulger has said he would favor decriminalization himself. He thinks doesn't necessarily want to make it legal, but says we don't necessarily need to put people in jail. Is decriminalization, in other words, you know, it remains illegal, but perhaps it's paid off with a fine or a ticket, a short-term solution, at least, recognizing that it's going to take a while to study and determine whether or not legalization is really the way to go?
In the short term, I think it's an appropriate step. And at the end of the day, the research that we're seeing, I think, is moving towards legalization and, you know, finding the appropriate regulatory system so it keeps our community safe, it's regulated in a manner like we do alcohol, and we're making sure that all the voices are included in that process, I think is where we're going to end up going. And it's a process that I would love to be a part of and make sure that we continue to move forward in a swift and efficient manner.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. We're speaking with John Hoadley, a candidate for State House in Michigan's 60th District. He's one of three Democrats running to represent the district, which includes the city of Kalamazoo. Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette is here as well. Alex?
John, I'd like to ask for your thoughts on term limits. Are they something that you support?
I think our term limit system is not working well for Michigan. You know, when you combine term limits with higher campaign spending and gerrymandered districts, you're really setting up a trifecta of bad government. You know, it's hard to make good public policy when you're under the constantly under the pressure of short terms to make an impact with higher spending and more costly elections in districts that, oftentimes are more geared towards the extreme than the consensus and in the moderates in the middle. So, you know, I think that's actually just one piece of reform that we need to look at if we really want to move government out of the hands of lobbyists, out of the hands of special interests, and back into a conversation that's about, you know, by and for the people.
And would you support a move to a part-time legislature?
That's a proposal that I need to do a little bit more study on. I do think that there's value when people have to work together for longer times. You build closer relationships, and it allows us to address the issues as they come up. You know, I think that we've seen the extreme in some other states, you know, where states that only meet once every other year or only meet for 6 or 8 weeks a year. And I'm not sure you get thoughtful public policy out of that. So I think there's a lot of value in our full-time legislature. And the question is, how do we make the process more responsive to citizens' needs?
The Citizens United decision allows greater contributions in a variety of manner. But one of the things it also maintained is that states can demand transparency and disclosure. Would you favor some moves at the state level to have more disclosure of who is giving to various super PACs and those sort of things?
I would absolutely support measures that increase transparency and disclosure. Yeah, I think that with the Citizens United decision, you know, the follow-up decisions that have further deregulated money at the state and federal levels, you know, we are really running into some problems where average voices in the democratic process are being drowned out by whoever can write the biggest check or who can do it in the craftiest, shadiest ways. You know, when I ran Bridget Mary McCormick's race, we had some of the largest amounts of dark money spending, this unregulated, these unregulated super PAC funds. In fact, $1 million was spent in her race in the last week on an ad that just, you know, was not true. And so I can tell you firsthand that this type of money is bad for democracy. And I would love to work with folks like our friends at the League of Women Voters or, you know, Rich Robinson, who's done some really good work at looking at the Michigan Campaign Finance Network, looking at ways that we can add some more sunlight to what would be an otherwise shady process.
Governor Snyder said he would like lawmakers to look into amending the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act, which is more or less the state's non-discrimination law, and look at including protections for sexual orientation, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people. Does this sound like a good idea to you?
I am in favor of doing work on amending the Elliott Larson Civil Rights Act to include protections based on sexual orientation and gender identity. In fact, I've been doing this work for a long time now here in Michigan. After the One Kalamazoo campaign, which, you know, I had a chance, I think, where a lot of folks met me doing work on advocating for fairness and equality here in Kalamazoo, 16 other municipalities in the last 3 years have adopted similar ordinances. And it's really about teeing up a conversation across the state, how we treat people fairly and equally. So I would absolutely be in favor of that. And it also makes good economic sense. You know, I talked about at the beginning about we need a Michigan that's open to everybody and protects our environment. And this is the work of folks like Richard Florida, who's saying by when we combine technology, talent, and tolerance, we can actually attract the next generation of entrepreneurs who are going to be here and start their businesses and start their families. And, you know, that's the kind of investment and development that's going to be best for Michigan. And so, yeah, let's put up, instead of this "you're not welcome here" sign that's been going up for so long, let's say, you know, everybody's welcome. We want your talent. We want you to contribute to our community. So absolutely, I would support that.
Among the endorsements listed on your webpage is a Quality Michigan Pride Pack, and it says that this is an opportunity to support an openly gay candidate for the Michigan legislature, which would be a tremendous step toward true representation in our state's government. Do you agree with that statement?
I believe that the more voices you can bring to the table, the better that our government will be. And so I'm honored to have the Equality Michigan Pride Pack's endorsement, CAFE, which is the Kalamazoo Alliance for Equality's endorsement, as well as the National Gay and Lesbian Victory Fund's endorsement. Michigan is one of 11 states that has zero openly gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender legislators. And we haven't had an openly gay legislator since Chris Kolb served and concluded in 2007. At the end of the day, we've seen, you know, a legislature that's been hostile to LGBT folks and folks who care about LGBT people and our families. So yeah, I do think that there is value in diversifying the voices that are at the table.
I assume that you would support changing Michigan law to allow for gay marriage.
Yes, I will conclusively say I support full marriage equality, and everyone should have the opportunity to care for someone that they love. And, you know, because it's everyone wants the same access for commitment, responsibility. You know, these are the values that are Michigan values. And it's time that we have you know, the opportunity for everybody to marry the person that they love.
Alex?
John, you mentioned in your announcement that education is something that's been on the chopping block in Michigan year after year. What methods would you support for increasing funds for K-12 education?
Well, when it comes to education, we need to have a priority-based budget that puts education back at the top of the priority list. You know, this is an opportunity, but we're going to say, what type of investment do we want to make in the next generation of Michigan? I talk a lot about, I think everybody should be an expert in something that they love. And so that means, you know, whether that's a trade, whether it means you're getting your doctorate, maybe it's going to some sort of certificate program. Our state does better when we have highly trained and educated folks participating in the workforce and participating in the communities. In fact, I'm about to release a 5-point plan on education that's going to dig a little bit deeper. So I talk about doing more to continue and to support and expand the early childhood education opportunities that are working and make sure every child has access to them. Talking about attracting and retaining the best teachers. You know, just as a side note here, I literally have talked to teachers who tell me that they do not encourage their students to become teachers because the profession has been under attack. And I come from a family of teachers. My parents are university professors. My sister's a teacher, aunts, cousins. And so this breaks my heart when I hear things like that. And so we need to be doing more to support them. You know, quickly, I think we can also do some pieces where we are funding the retirement system in a slightly different way with more from the general fund instead of the shell game that we're doing where we're pushing it from the state back to local communities and pulling money out of classrooms. I talk about we can create a capital pool for at-risk schools to increase investments. And, you know, the last one, which is maybe the most important, is that we could fund and we could an adequacy study to actually figure out how much it costs to educate children adequately in Michigan. There's a bill, 5269, that is sitting in the House that would answer the question, so how much exactly does it cost to make sure that a child leaves our system with an adequate amount of education? And other states have taken on this task and we haven't because lawmakers are afraid of the answer. But I'm not. We should be basing public policy on facts, and that would be a very simple and straightforward way that we could actually get to the bottom of this.
What are your feelings on statewide education standards? Are they something that you support?
You know, I think with the question about Common Core and other educational standards, yeah, I do think that there's value in making sure that we are providing some framework so every kid has an opportunity to get the access to quality education. You know, I do love the piece though, that we have to retain some form of local control to make sure that, you know, we're adequately addressing the needs in each community. So I'm supportive of the concept and want to make sure that the policy is right.
We're down to just a little bit of time left. Let me ask you about experience. You, as I noted at the beginning, are running for political office for the first time. You've managed campaigns. But as I look at the history of this area since I have been here for now almost 18 years, generally, people who move up to the state legislature have served on a city commission or the county commission, Portage City Council for the 61st District. This is a route that you are pursuing that normally is not the way people take to get to the state house. So make the case here that that you're going to do the job as best as can be done without having served on a local government board yet.
I hope people are going to be voting for the best ideas, the best energy, the best vision for the 60th district, for Kalamazoo, and for Michigan as their number one decision-making criteria when they go into that ballot box. And when it comes down to talking about policy, when it comes down to increasing voices and participation in the democratic process, when it comes down to strong advocacy for the values that we share and the issues that are important, I have a track record that shows that I'm ready on day one in Lansing. I've been doing work on important and tough issues across the state and across the country for over a decade now. And that's the skills that we can bring to make sure that Kalamazoo has a larger voice in the decision-making process of our state. That's part of the reason that I'm running. You know, I get it. It is not the typical path that people have seen in the past. And in fact, I might even look more like the folks that are coming out of KVCC, Western, or K-College than some of the other people in the race. But I hope that folks see my candidacy in this campaign as a bridge. You know, there is a legacy of outcomes, of Michigan values that have come before us. And we have an obligation to continue that legacy. And I promise that I will if folks elect me to serve. But we also have a vision about where the state is going and a set of opportunities that are really unique for this coming generation, the millennial generation, which is a lot of people's children or grandchildren. And so I think that I can be that bridge. I can bring that experience and I can bring those stories and advocacy to Lansing in a way that's going to make sure that our values are heard and represented in the state legislature.
How old are you?
I am 30 years old.
Is there any sort of a learning curve for someone going to the state legislature if they have never been on a city commission, county commission, et cetera?
I think anyone going to the state legislature or serving in a new office for the first time is going to have a learning curve. But I think it's also important to remember that the conversation and process that happens in Lansing is significantly different than the process that, say, happens on the city commission or in the county commission. You know, one of the things that's different is that when we go to Lansing, you've got to figure out how to both advocate in a caucus of 50 or 50 plus. You're going to have to be working with lawmakers across the state and folks that you're not going to see every day. You know, unlike the county commission or the city commission, you're not going to run into them at the grocery store or at church. You know, so it is a different set of assets and skills needed. One that I've been doing because I've been doing that work, whether we're talking about environmental issues, we're talking about women's issues, we're talking about labor issues, or economic issues. I've been doing that work for over a decade. And so that's why I'm ready when it comes to making a difference in policy on day one in Lansing.
John Hoadley, thank you for your time.
Thank you for being here. Thanks for allowing me to be here. I really appreciate it.
John Hoadley is a Democrat running for State House in Michigan's 60th District, which includes the city of Kalamazoo. And we also want to thank Alex Mitchell of the Kalamazoo Gazette.
Thanks for having me, Gordon.
This is West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.